This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. Now, this is the place where government actions come face to face with business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com and, of course, on the air right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30. The news definitely hit with a thud. Of course, we're talking about some less than stellar job numbers. In fact, they were downright disappointing for the month of March. That report came on the heels of what had been hailed as the strongest report in years. Many left wondering, wonder what happened. Well, someone we know has some of those answers. Her name is Dr. Neela Richardson. She's a senior economic analyst with Bloomberg Government, and she'll be here in just a little while to explain. But we're going to kick off the program with a talk of sequestration, looking at it in a way I had never really thought to discuss it, quite frankly. And I didn't really look at this angle, but I'm glad someone did. Her name is Lorraine Wellert, a reporter with Bloomberg News, and she joins me now. Lorraine, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Alan.
So I was blown away by your article. I read it on Bloomberg Government, and we're talking about Virginia's contract fat Fairfax girds for lean days. Talk about lean days. I had no idea that Fairfax, our little old Fairfax County, was as big as it is. You compare it here to the economy of Hungary.
That's right. Yeah, it's not so little, right? I mean, Fairfax County has one of the largest school systems in the country, obviously one of the largest economies in the country, and it's also one of the richest places in the United States.
Also deeply entrenched in government contracting, Sharon Bulova, a Democrat who's led the Fairfax Board of Supervisors since 2009, says, and I quote, "It's become obvious that our closeness to the federal government is both good and bad news. As we take a look at the sequester, a lot of money is going away."
A lot of money is going away. We don't know how much yet, but it doesn't really matter because procurement is such a huge part of the economy in Fairfax. Any hit is going to hurt.
I had no idea that they were the largest receiver of government procurement and spending in Fairfax County. Our little old Fairfax County again.
That's right. We have some major companies there. I mean, if you look at the top contractors in the United States, the top vendors to the U.S. government, at least four of them are based in Fairfax County. SAIC is a famous one. Booz Allen, another big one. So yeah, we don't notice it, but they're there.
So with a median income of almost $120,000, a hit such as that could be delivered by the sequester as it continues to roll out is one that will not be easily taken. What are the residents of Fairfax County going to do about this?
Probably the first thing they're going to do is pay more taxes because the county is getting ready for these losses. They describe them as an unknown, so they don't know exactly how much they have to prepare. But this is a well-run county. Its leaders are generally to have done the right thing over the years.
Yeah.
This has sort of crept up on them in a way. So they're preparing for whatever may come, but we're going to see higher taxes in the county for sure to make up for some of these losses. And then we're seeing some smaller things. For example, Jerry Gordon, who runs their economic development out there, he says he's starting to see more federal employees show up to like their entrepreneurial workshops and their small business workshops over there. So he suspects that we're seeing some of these employees, contract employees, look for new types of work to do, maybe branch out on their own, that sort of thing.
Opportunities to mm-hmm. advance themselves, online education maybe, going to and that's interesting. I never would have thought of that. It's the group of people who are now employed bettering themselves rather than the group who are unemployed trying to make themselves better and actually get a job.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, Fairfax County's unemployment is basically nothing. It's less than 4%.
Right.
So yeah, what we have here is a really highly educated population, highly skilled population. These guys aren't stupid. They see that there are going to be job cuts. They're getting ready for it. They're looking for opportunities.
So 26 years ago, Company Mobile Corporation decided, rather than headquartering in Manhattan, making its way to Fairfax County. And that's kind of when this whole boom began, correct?
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. If you go back then, in the 70s, Mobile first started moving down here mm-hmm. with a big division. And this was so exciting for Fairfax. I mean, they literally moved into this big empty campus. There were literally chicken farms around, dairy farms back then. So, and here comes Mobil Oil, the largest oil company on earth at the time, you know, moving to Little Fairfax.
Right.
So it was very exciting. Then when they moved their headquarters and the rest of the company in the 80s, Fairfax was like, puts us on the map. Other people are going to follow. We're not going to be dependent on government. We're not going to be a company town anymore. That was the idea.
I always envisioned it as that area. I live in Maryland and have been my entire life. But I always envisioned that area as the area of free thinkers. You know, all the tech companies seemed to move out. AOL was out there.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of big companies out there that are, I look at it as like Google Lite. You know, everybody out there wearing shorts and flip-flops to work and the whole deal. And where the business actually gets done.
Yeah, I mean, Silicon Valley of the East, right, is
there
what they like to call themselves. And, you know, and Tom Davis, who's a former congressman from the area and also ran the Fairfax County Board for a very long time, you know, he points out that we have that Silicon Valley connection in part because of our government connection. We built DARPA, DARPA built the internet. I'm sorry. So that was here. This is where it started. And Tom made a very good point. He said we got the internet wave. We caught the .com boom, but then it became a .bomb.
Right.
And it's gone now. I mean, we still have some there, but AOL's gone.
Yeah.
UUnet's gone. It's
We're still looking at a technology corridor that generates a lot of money.
Yes.
And that money is coming, a lot of it is coming from the government. So there are a lot of people out there living off of the government, so to speak. And there was a point in time many, many years ago, people would go, I can remember my dad. He was a government employee for years, worked at the Library of Congress, retired from there, and used to say, you know, when I told him I wanted to be on the radio, he's like, you got to go work for Pacifica, or you got to go work for one of these government-run radio stations. You get a job with the government, you're set. Not so much.
Not so much anymore. That's
so
right.
Much.
That's right.
In fact, the fact that this sequester is happening and rolling out slowly but surely through Fairfax County, Moody's may downgrade the county?
Yes. So Moody's, you may remember when the U.S. almost got downgraded, or did. By
yeah, yeah, it did.
Moody's and others put a lot of other groups on warning, a lot of institutions on warning that they would be next. Fairfax County was one of them. And that's because so much of our business is government. However, it's interesting because in January, after Moody's made this warning, Fairfax did float some bonds and they got a great rate. It was like less than 3%. So investors are still confident in the county, still have confidence in the state, despite these hits that are coming. So we'll see.
Moving into 2014, what do we have to look forward to? If the sequester remains in place, how are they going to budget? What's going to happen looking ahead?
They don't know.
Right.
So they're going into their budgeting process now, hearings and that sort of thing. But you know, this will be like the frog in the blender, kind of frog in the pot of water,
right?
The slow boil. But this is a very healthy, wealthy county generally. So I think it won't be catastrophic. There are other parts of the country where it's going to be really bad.
I was just about to say,
you know, lesser populated areas where maybe half of the workforce is employed in some fashion by the government or through the government. Those places will be really hurt. Fairfax, you know, it'll be easier on them. But what makes Fairfax so interesting is they've always known this day would come, and they've done a lot of the right things to avoid it, and still. They're, you know, still the government's gotten even bigger despite the county's efforts to rein it in.
Lorraine Woolard is her name. She is the author of an article that I found on Bloomberg Government. Outstanding. It's Virginia's contract, Fat Fairfax Girds for Lean Days. Lorraine, any parting thoughts for Fairfax County as we roll further into the sequester? Friends, family.
Hey, folks, I'm with you. I live in Alexandria, so we're all in the same boat.
There you go. This too shall pass. Lorraine, thanks for being a part of the program.
Thanks, Alan.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we're talking jobs numbers now. The jobs report came out, and it was dismal, to say the very least. Here to explain yourself, Dr. Neela Richardson, why are these numbers so bad?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, and thanks for having me. But let's start off. I mean, it was a bad jobs report.
It's like I'm holding you responsible for the job.
Well, you know, if I could change the world, I would, Alan. But understood. All I can do is come in your show and explain the world as I know it. And what I saw was, you know, we saw the unemployment rate go down to 7.6%. And in a real economy, that's a good thing. But this is not a good thing here, because about 500,000 people just exited the job market.
Right.
And that's the reason why we saw the fall in unemployment rate. And that comes, it's disappointing in part because it comes on the heels of high increases in job creation, you know, averaging over 200,000 jobs a month in January and February. And so now we're looking at something that's perhaps more structural than it is cyclical, and it may take government stimulus to get out of.
Government stimulus, which I don't, here I am on my soapbox now, where is that stimulus going to come from? There is no place for that to happen. A sequester is rolling out as we speak. How is the president going to turn this around?
So from what we hear about the president's budget that will be released released this week, is that, you know, there is no plans for added in stimulus in his budget. And so when you put that next to this jarring jobs report, you have to question what direction we're going, economically speaking. And that's the question I have right now.
So less than half of what we had been looking at previously, like 88,000 or so jobs created this time around, feel like a failure? Does it? I mean, are people now not, the economy is bad. Yes, it's bad. We're rolling out a sequester now, and as time progresses, it's going to get worse. Are people now just throwing in the towel and saying, forget it, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's not going to get better. Pounding their head against the wall, not seeing any relief, and saying it's easier for me to collect a check.
Well, I think there are two things going on. First, it's on the labor demand side. Corporations, they are not hiring the way they used to, and yet they're making pretty good profits. So again, that looks like a structural change. Companies have figured out how to make money with less workers, and they're not hiring the way they used to out of a recession. So that's one thing you're going on. And uncertainty about the direction of the economy and the direction of future demand definitely is keeping companies on the sidelines when it comes to hiring. On the other side, the supply side, you're seeing people make different decisions. Instead of going into the jobs market, they may decide to go back to school.
Go back to school, right.
Older workers may decide to retire because they're not getting the kind of jobs that they want. And then there's this iceberg of unemployed workers, you know, about 40% of the unemployed who haven't worked in about 6 months, the long-term unemployed, 6 months or more. And so that could be a skill mismatch, trying to find the jobs that the economy is offering.
To be unemployed in this marketplace has got to be a frustrating proposition. Dealing with the government, having to navigate the waters of unemployment, along with just a future, a tunnel that you just cannot find the light at the end of it. I could only imagine, and I'm just thinking out loud here, what it must be like to be in the shoes of someone who clearly has the skills to do something. And in an age where companies aren't hiring the people that they had been hiring previously, it's got to be tough. Even when you go back to school and get that further your education to come out with, hey, more lambskin or sheepskin in your hand, mm-hmm. showing that you can do X, Y, Z or PDQ, whatever the case may be, will there be a place for you then?
It's a great question. And what research has shown is that if you get a slow start as a young person in the economy, that start is actually, it stays with you, you know? And so what this jobs report shows us is that when you have young people who don't get to use their skills, or people who are, you know, standing in the sidelines waiting for the economy to recover, they become not just cyclical, as economists say,
sure.
cyclical victims of a bad economy. It becomes structural because those skills don't get used, and then the economy keeps moving on. And so what's needed in something like this, I think, is someone government entity to step in and try to break these structural blocks that are impeding economic growth. But you're not seeing that on Capitol Hill. It's not just about spending more money. It's clearing the uncertainty in policymaking that will free up some companies to start hiring again.
Does it start with term limits, so to speak?
Well, you're asking an economist a
political
question.
I'm just saying, you know, you've got people who on Capitol Hill who are making the decisions, and they've been there for a long time, and those decisions are getting us where we are today. Term limits could be an opportunity to clean house.
I'm not the oldest person in the world, but I'm not the youngest. And honestly, I've never seen such a political blockade of economic progress. And so I think that is a huge impediment to the economy. And not to say that our economy is in the trash can. It's not. We actually have some seeds of growth. You see Wall Street and corporate earnings, you know, very high. The stock market has hit and surpassed records. You see the housing recovery just starting to turn a corner after so many years. And so there are pockets of places in different industries that are rebounding. We saw in this latest report that there was an increase in professional services, there was an increase in construction, increase in healthcare jobs, and yet it's not enough.
Right.
And the longer this type of growth happens, this kind of slow growth environment, the more inequality you'll start to see as well.
Let's start talking about the job front moving forward, like looking at 2014. I understand that Obamacare has, and I'm doing the air quotes with Obamacare, excuse me, they have a provision in there for it's a large number of jobs for people who will be these healthcare navigators, mm-hmm. People who will sit on the phone. If you have, if you're employed, your insurance provider can help you navigate those waters. If you do not have a job and you're taking advantage of Obamacare, these navigators will help you decide what provider to see and walk you through the insurance process. The state of California, from what I understand, has asked for about 20,000 of these positions. There is light at the end of the tunnel. It's just another 8 months away, unfortunately.
Right. The progress is being made, and healthcare is a great example. We are an aging population, and so because of that alone, you're going to see an increase in healthcare providers and the industries that support that. But also with new regulations are new opportunities for growth and employment. And so we're definitely going to see that in the future. And that is a bright spot. Housing is a bright spot that continues to help the economy instead of detracting as it did for so many quarters. But when you look around the world, Europe continues to be quite a ditch of uncertainty. Every now and then a new country springs up that has a new kind of bond problem. And so that uncertainty feeds back into our economy because we don't know if there's enough global demand to support our businesses and our production. And then you can look to the emerging market, which seems to be doing actually better. And so that is also a source of growth and demand that might help the U.S. economy. So you're absolutely right. I don't think we're stuck in the mud forever. I think there is a path forward, but it could be helped considerably by a more effective and efficient political process.
Did you just say term limits? I could have sworn that's what you just said. I'm just speculating, though.
You know, the mesh between economics and political science and policy is not very far apart, you know, because you can't have economic growth without policy. They're in tandem. They work side by side. And so often these lines crisscross. But I think in this particular scenario, policy is dominating economics right now. Yeah. We should see recovery. We've seen it in every other cycle.
Right.
There's no reason why, given what the Fed is doing on the monetary front, low interest rates, there's no reason why we shouldn't see corporate investment and hiring. We're not seeing it. Some of that can be attributable to the stalemates we're seeing in Washington.
She said it, not me. I'm just saying.
I'm just kidding. I don't mean to throw you under the bus there, Dr. Neela Richardson, senior economic analyst with Bloomberg Government.
And that's what happens when economists try to talk about policy.
It's quite all right. You know what? You're typically dead on. And I feel that everything you've said, I would stand behind 100%, but I'm going to be behind you using you as a shield. Trust me. Thank you so much for bringing us such a bastion of hope known as the jobs numbers, the jobs report. Anything, I mean, you did find some good nuggets in there. Obviously, healthcare is an emerging field that people are going to be taken care of. As you said, we are an aging society, and jobs are going to be created around it, and medicine is going to be a needed thing. So those of you who are looking for jobs right now, go back to school. Wait till 2014. Go back to school. Get your medical degrees. Is that right? Yeah.
But don't incur too much student loan debt. That could stymie some of your wealth creation going forward. Look, I believe in innovation. I definitely believe in the power of the American worker and in job creation. And so though my short-term forecast is a little bit on the downside, I'd say that the U.S. has much upside potential, and that's what we're looking for in the future, and I'm sure we'll see it.
I feel I should stand and put my hand on my chest.
And put your hand on your chest and salute, because it's all going to happen.
Dr. Richardson, thank you so much for being a part of the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The president's long-awaited budget has finally seen the light of day. Here's what he had to say about it.
At a time when too many Americans are still looking for work, my budget begins by making targeted investments in areas that will create jobs right now and prime our economy to keep generating good jobs down the road. As I said in my State of the Union address, we should ask ourselves three questions every day. How do we make America a magnet for new jobs? How do we give our workers the skills they need to do those jobs? And how do we make sure that hard work leads to a decent living? To make America a magnet for good jobs, this budget invests in new manufacturing hubs to help turn regions left behind by globalization into global centers of high-tech jobs. We'll spark new American innovation and industry with cutting-edge research, like the initiative I announced to map the human brain and cure disease. We'll continue our march towards energy independence and address the threat of climate change. And our Rebuild America partnership will attract private investment to put construction workers back on the job, rebuilding our roads, our bridges, and our schools, in turn attracting even more new business to communities across the country. To help workers earn the skills they need to fill those jobs, we'll work with states to make high-quality preschool available to every child in America. And we're going to pay for it by raising taxes on tobacco products that harm our young people. It's the right thing to do. We'll reform our high schools and job training programs to equip more Americans with the skills they need to compete in the 21st century economy. And we'll help more middle-class families afford the rising cost of college. To make sure hard work is rewarded, we'll build new ladders of opportunity into the middle class for anybody who's willing to work hard to climb them. So we'll partner with 20 of our communities hit hardest by the recession to help them improve housing and education and business investment. And we should make the minimum wage a wage you can live on, because no one who works full time should have to raise his or her family in poverty. My budget also replaces the foolish across-the-board spending cuts that are already hurting our economy. And I have to point out that many of the same members of Congress who supported deep cuts are now the ones complaining about them the loudest as they hit their own communities. Of course, the people I feel for are the people who are directly feeling the pain of these cuts.
Tune in to Capital Gains Sundays at 11:30 on WUSA TV 9. That's immediately following Face the Nation. And we'll be back next Thursday at 11 a.m. with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.